freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
After all, a bunch of slaves. Bunch of slaves.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Welcome to another episode of Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. It is September the 27th, 2016. 43 days until the election. Last night was what everybody has been waiting for. WrestleMania 1, I guess, itself, the first of the three presidential debates. I don't even know what to say. I don't know how anybody could walk away from watching that and feel confident about what's in front of us as a nation right now. Unfortunately, we don't get ourselves in these scenarios, these predicaments overnight. And that's some of the stuff we try to talk about here at Anti-Media Radio. What's some of the stuff behind the scenes and some of the news that corporate media doesn't talk about? And I guess more of a counter narrative to a lot of the corporate propaganda that's out there. For example, I know that Hillary Clinton especially, and I saw a story going around earlier from some people in The Guardian going around on social media about how some of the polls were in Trump's favor because of Russia. First off, I don't think Trump is honest, and I do believe he's probably paying people to bots to get votes on polls online. At the same time, too, you have to remember that he has, you know, 15, 20,000 people go to see him speak, and 200 go to see Hillary, so it's not a shock that he's winning these online polls either, because there's doesn't seem to be a lot of mass support for her, really enthusiastic support, like there was for Bernie Sanders and like there is for Trump. Russia's not perfect. Russia's not, you know, they're not much better than anybody else. And it's not like this is, oh, well, Russia's good. That's not what it is. They're using Russia right now as propaganda to drive us into war for whatever reason. You hear from the neocons, from people like Bill Kristol, the Project for a New American Century, and you're even Hillary do it last night. There's absolutely no reason for us to be in a war with Russia. I don't know if you saw the exchange from a congressional hearing about why we can't have a no-fly zone in Syria. And the general commented that, well, to do that, we would have to be in an all-out open war with Russia. That's what we're facing here. This is, you know, this is the biggest issue of the day. It is how we're handling foreign policy. On top of all the other domestic issues, I mean, there's a million things going on. Me personally, I feel that the foreign policy is a huge, huge deal right now. But of course, there's other stuff going on, and we're going to talk a lot about that tonight. I want to go ahead and bring on our co-host for the evening, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, what's up?
Good evening. How are you, Mr. Gibson?
Can't complain. Better than a lot of people, I suppose. So no reason to complain at all. And Mr. Kevin Knight. Kevin, what's going on?
Hey, man. Doing good. Good to be back with you guys.
Good, good. All right, Shannon, I'm going to start with you. Do you have any thoughts whatsoever on last night's bickering fest?
I have absolutely no thought whatsoever. You want to know why?
Tell me why.
While you suckers were watching the debates, I had my Kodi plugged in, my Amazon Fire Stick that has Kodi on it, and watched whatever I wanted to watch other than the debates for free. Suck it. I want no part of any of that nonsense and foolishness. I know that it was a big spectacle and it was a wrestling match and so on and so forth. From all of the anecdotes, I will take that back. I have seen a few clips today throughout the day. I was very busy today and didn't get a chance to really catch up with the news cycle. Thank goodness. So, yeah, my first takeaway was, wow. Gosh, where to begin? A lot of inconsistencies with Mr. Trump. Hillary's still continuing to try to, quote-unquote, take the high road, kind of like the, I guess if you want to call them, a debate that she had with Bernie Sanders. What a snooze fest that was. And, you know, I can see what she's trying to do as far as bringing all of those people in. And look, I'm a much smarter, much more sophisticated, much more classy person than Donald Trump. I mean, again, it's just like going for the female vote. It's all about aesthetics. Let's go ahead and be real about who Hillary Clinton is. She has murdered way more people than anybody else that tried to run for president this year. Can we all safely agree on that?
Amen. Yeah.
That seems like the case. I
mean, Jeb Bush kind of maybe gets it by association, but you can't help what your drunk uncle did or your daddy or your brother. Come on now.
But
he would have done the same thing. Let's be real.
Of course, I watched it, and she stayed on script. She, you know, seems like she hit all her marks and said it when she was supposed to say it. I mean, she seemed like a robot. She was in and out of coherence. Sometimes she looked like she was pretty jazzed up and the medicine was kicking in. And other times she looked like she didn't really know where she was. Overall, though, Trump did a bad job, I think. He did all right at the beginning of it, but, you know, whatever. He's lying, she's lying. It's all, when we say good job and bad job, it's, you know, who did the best with the theater? You know, who's the most entertaining? You expect him to be the most entertaining, but he got called out on so much stuff and caught in lies.
He did, and even lies that he told a few minutes previous. I mean,
I'll tell you my favorite, though, it was pretty amazing, was she said that the reason you haven't released your tax returns is because you don't pay federal income tax. Instead of denying this, Donald Trump's response is, that's because I'm smart. So
well, now, hey, you can say what you want to. That's pretty good.
But basically, he admitted that he doesn't pay federal income taxes. And then later, she tried to come back with a line about how they were wasting all the money in Washington and were in debt. And she said something to the fact, well, if you would have paid your federal income taxes, maybe we'd have money to do all this stuff, Donald. And he goes, well, you would have squandered it, too.
Well, I think it does need to be said that when he talks about, and actually he did come back. I watched a clip. I watched two friends that are on opposite sides of the proverbial fence there, and they were, you know, going back and forth about that claim. And one of them actually posted a video of Donald being asked immediately following debates about that, and he said he never said that. He said he never said that. But, you know, whether or not he never said that, I think is a little bit beside the point. I think it is worth mentioning that when he mentions about the income tax, it's kind of like, what's his name, that runs Yorkshire and Hathaway, the big investor, Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett.
Yeah. You know, he talks about his lady, his secretary, and the income tax he supposedly paid. Well, there's a big difference when you're on that kind of level. You're paying taxes, but it's capital gains taxes. So you're not filing a traditional federal income tax. You know, when you file that form, you're not putting income tax here. You're having this stuff filed in ways that most people are not familiar with. And so I think he was right, but it just goes to show how loaded a question can be, and the various and who's going to take it which way, and how is it going to be perceived. But I just think it's funny that he would flip flop literally right after that, along with the China, of course, the global warming being man made by China.
The tweet is
right
still
after
up.
That. Oh, I know, I saw it.
It's still up, saying that climate change is a hoax. Meanwhile, on stage last night, he's like, "I've never said that. I don't know what you're talking about."
No, it actually goes a step further. He actually says, "You know what he was talking about in saying, I don't know what you're talking about, is not the fact that he denied that climate change was a hoax. It was that he actually claimed that China started the climate change hoax. That was actually what he was talking about when he said, no, I didn't say that. But he actually did tweet that back in 2012. And that's why a lot of people, he's hoping people's memories are short, which a lot of times they are. But his tweet was...
Oh, they are. Yeah, I mean, little, you know, tiny little inconsistencies like that are going to be quickly forgotten by the time that we have our next debate.
Right.
And going back to the income tax thing, though, let's be honest, guys. Do you think that Trump is really smart enough to sit down, wade through all of the tax code, and figure out exactly how he can maneuver it so he pays no money? Come on, man. He's got an army of accountants and lawyers and financial advisors and, you know, people at his beck and call that handle all that small little detail for him.
Of course.
Do you really think that Donald Trump is sweating during tax time? No, he's got some people to take care of that. He's too busy flying around the world, keeping it real, or whatever his perception of real is.
Well, yeah, he is what he is. But this brought up another question today, too, about Hillary Clinton. Think about how rich the Clintons are. How many hundreds of millions of dollars they're worth. I don't know exactly, because I know the reports differ. But at least with idiot Trump, you know where he got his money from, to a degree. The Clintons have been lifelong government employees, and they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Where did that money come from? I mean, nobody presses her. They didn't press her on the emails, but I'll say to her credit, she answered the question in two lines, and that was the end of it. Whereas everything that was said to Trump, he would sit there and harp on it for 15 minutes.
It seems like he was waiting on the crowd to react, and that's when the crowd didn't have a overwhelming, you know, a clap or a pause. Something he's not necessarily in the Republican debate. You know, he got a lot of claps. I think he went into it expecting to be the hero, and automatically had everybody rooting for him, and that's when I saw that he kept rambling on, is when he kept waiting for the crowd to respond, and everybody would just kind of was like, hey, dude, you know, you're full of it. And and I think Hillary did a fantastic, I have to give it to her. I think she let Trump hang himself.
I think so, and I think, too, one of the things is, because, you know, it sounds like hyperbole, but it's what I really believe. I really think Trump's running his campaign like he's in the WWE. And funnily enough, Linda McMahon was seen at Trump Tower yesterday morning going to visit him, Vince McMahon's wife. But
consultation, maybe?
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think because of that, he feeds off the crowd and the energy of the crowd and the audience. He didn't have that. And he fell apart. She's a robot and doesn't need it. So yeah. I think that, you know, that hurt him. I think you look for audience engagement. and it wasn't there. But, you know, again, it's, I mean, we're wrestling, yeah. Because that's pretty much what it is.
He does feed off a crowd, and you know, he's been, Kevin pointed that out brilliantly. He has given, especially when he gets a smattering of applause, he just digs in even further. And, you know, he could have saved the day last night with some of the, I mean, just on public record information about Hillary Clinton, instead of trying to dive, you know, dive too deep one way or this way, or, you know, staying on the emails and things like that. I mean, you know, there's so many more things. I mean, you can sit and talk for 20 minutes about the Clinton Foundation and absolutely ruin her.
Oh, you could do
it. If you had that kind of audience, and, you know, he didn't really go for it. So I don't know, maybe he was dissuaded from doing that before he got on and it threw him off.
We made his comment about how he was going to, when she called him out for being sexist, he was going to go in about Bill being a rapist, and at the time said, well, I'm not going to do that because there's family here, I'm going to be respectful. But after the fact, he said he didn't say it because Chelsea was in the audience. That was his reason.
I'm sure he really cares about Chelsea Clinton's feelings.
Well, his daughter is friends, you know, so close with Chelsea, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, and we know how Trump feels about his daughter.
Right, closer than most probably. But man, what you think? Any Trump? I mean, were there that many Trump supporters that really were happy with this performance? I think either way, he was kind of setting himself up for failure if he went into.
I'm sure your absolute lowest IQ of the low, your Confederate flag wavers are still saying, yeah, he really socked it to her. But no, the general consensus, both among Trump supporters, Hillary supporters, and just casual observers, is that Hillary gets a nod on this one. She wins by decision.
You know, it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, we all lose. We all lose.
There was a winner on that stage last night, but the losers were all sitting in the crowd and watching the TV. I watched Cody truth. Last night, dude.
Because what's like, that's it. Those are one of the two you're going to get, you know, is so it seems. But anyway, I'm going to move on from this. Tomorrow, big news, will they do it? Senate's going to try to overturn Obama's veto on the bill to sue Saudi Arabia. JASTA, for those who don't know, it's the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. But basically what it means is that families of 9/11, of the victims, are going to be able to sue Saudi Arabia in American courts because there's a lot of evidence that suggests, as we all know, Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11. And we have last night a presidential candidate's received, 20% of their funding from Saudi Arabia. On the other side with the Republicans, one of the second biggest stockholder at Fox is a Saudi royal. We just got through selling, approving the sale of over $1 billion in weapons to Saudi Arabia, not to mention all the other aid and weapons we've sold them. Really, of the past 16 years, 16 years has been really bad the way we've butted up to them. And we're going to say it's okay to sue them because they were involved in 9/11. Think about the implications of that. We have blown up the entire Middle East. We're dealing with this refugee problem. We're dealing with the Syria problem, the Russia problem. You know, that all ties into Syria right now with Iran. You know, they go on about, you made payments to Iran. We've talked crap about every country there. We've tried to blow every country up, or at least threaten to blow them up, all except for a handful. And the majority of those are in the Saudi coalition, which is, of course, headed by Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar, United Emirates. And no big deal. They just keep getting rewarded every step of the way. And nobody acts like there's a huge, huge problem with that. We have now Congress admitting to their involvement in 9/11, and yet they just still keep getting rewarded.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer actually was a very large part of this. He basically just kind of just, you know, put it in a whole new section of the original bill, the lawsuit bill, and it gives the Justice and State Departments the power to stay court action indefinitely. So all they have to do, you can go ahead and file your lawsuit against Saudi Arabia, but if the Justice Department or the State Department happens to come in and whispers in the judge's ear, then suddenly the court will go ahead and suspend the case and until further notice.
Surprise, surprise. They left a back door in.
Yeah, a huge back door. Yeah.
And I tell you kind of the catch here with it is it's not very often at all Obama says something that, you know, I completely agree with, but his reasoning, whereas I clearly believe that, you know, this should pass and the victims of the family members should finally have their day in court, at least on some level, to hold those even some kind of way were responsible for their family members dying. Obama said, well, if we do this, this is going to open the door for other foreign countries to start suing us. And you know what? Think about what our foreign policy is. And think about all the times you just see a headline. Whoops, some civilians got killed. Whoops, a hospital got bombed. Sorry about that. And think about all the times you don't hear about it. Think about the times you hear we got so-and-so, and in the midst of getting so-and-so, you know, there were a bunch of people that died in the process. So that would definitely open up Pandora's box of the United States being sued from numerous countries. And then where does it end? Do they
there's probably a lot more things probably collectively that the U.S. would have to account for, considering all of the countries versus just what the U.S. would be holding Saudi Arabia accountable for.
Right. I mean, it seems like the U.S., there's a lot more that the U.S. has been involved in. And
oh, yeah.
And think about, okay, then you go, this is what's really odd about it, is that everything Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen right now, and where have they gotten all their weaponry for this? You know, who's supplying the funds and the bombs for Saudi Arabia to openly commit all these war crimes? It's us. And we're going to say we're going to sue them while we still continue the cycle. But it just makes no sense. It makes no sense. But this is our reality now. Reality doesn't make sense anymore. It just kind of is what it is. I mean, take last night, for example. What do you even say?
Y'all have fun at the polls, man. I have nothing to do with this. This is ridiculous.
Cody out.
Even my TV is anarchist, man. Come on.
I can testify. I saw it. It's pretty groovy.
It's amazing.
We three that live here in Alabama, we often hear about how conservative Sessions and Shelby are supposed to be. Richard Shelby and Jeff Sessions, the bane of Alabama conservatism. So it really struck a chord in me when it struck a nerve when I heard they were passing and going right along with this deal to provide all those tanks and weapons to Saudi Arabia. So I did put a call into my local representative. It took them a day to get back to me. And as you can imagine, I did not mention, I failed to mention the connection to 9/11, but the young lady that called me back, I was actually surprised, called back from Sessions' office, and she actually mentioned that basically what Sessions' whole angle was that she understood that people were upset about the his conservative bona fides, but that he was basically going at it like he thought that Saudi Arabia was somehow going to battle and keep Iran and be basically a hedge against them. But he actually, you know, recognized and admitted that he through her, of course, that about the ties to 9/11 that Saudi Arabia has. And so I thought that was interesting that him, of all people, are conceding that, yeah, there looks to be some ties, but yet I still went ahead and voted to give weapons. And I'm sure he thought most people were not familiar with Yemen at all.
That's nuts, because these same exact people use 9/11 to go into Afghanistan, to go into Iraq, to justify the Patriot Act, to justify what the NSA is doing, to justify what the TSA is doing to people at airports. They use 9/11 as an excuse to completely shred the Constitution. And yet, they finally get somebody that's actually involved, and they're like, nah, never mind. It's all right. No big deal. We're just going to reward them. That's crazy. That's nuts. I mean, either we are being run by the dumbest group of people ever assembled for anything, or they're a bunch of psychopaths.
They're doing exactly as what they're told from their script. Come on, man.
It's not even that. These people, at the end of the day, they make their own decisions. They have an understanding of what's going on here. They're still choosing to do this. They chose to give you some sort of an answer, Kevin. I mean, of course they've got their corporate sponsors that they're going to go along with. There's no doubt of that. But something this blatant, they're just like, nah, no big deal.
And it really is. At the end of the day, it will be no big deal. It'll be just another little quiet footnote in history, and it will continue to happen. As long as we continue to let it happen, and we're not going to vote our way out of this. That's what got us in this mess to begin with, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I don't even... I think, you know, that It's a lot more complicated, I think, than, oh, we just voted ourselves into this mess. I think the money getting involved, I think at some point...
Wait a minute. You're right. Now I think the two are definitely related. And if we can take voting out of the equation, because you really can. I mean, you know, ask Bernie Sanders sometime. He'll tell you all about it.
You can take voting out of the equation because of that. That proves you can't vote yourself in or out of a situation because they're going to put in whoever they want to put in. Just ask Bernie Sanders.
And why are they going to do that? They're going to do that to make money. And that's what we really need to start voting with from here on out, is start voting with our money where our money goes. But then you watch, and they're already doing this very quickly over the past few years, cash. You're going to start seeing a lot less cash, and they're doing everything they can. The central banking system is to phase cash out altogether.
Oh yeah, they're already
and they're doing that. And again, in the name of terror, in the name of the black market, so on and so forth. We need to get rid of all this dirty, nasty money, and then everything's got to be put on a card and on a chip, and so on and so forth. And that way, when you start acting up, they can just go ahead and deactivate that chip, and guess what? You're broke.
And, they've actually outlawed cash already and put a date on it to outlaw it. I think over in Sweden, either Sweden or Norway, one of those countries over there that's kind of seemingly touts their progressive ideologies. They've actually put a date to completely phase out cash. They'll be one of the first. But man, it's definitely a brave new world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sadly, it seems like it's where we're at. I mean, we're living in just theatrical times here.
Well, and along with that, when you look at, you know, the value that money has on our life, just on our day-to-day life, somebody that goes from extremely wealthy and, well, not what we consider comfortable, suddenly goes from that to broke because they accidentally make a comment at a bar to a friend of theirs, and a government agent happens to be sitting in the room, you know, we need to check into so-and-so. Well, let's just go ahead and freeze his accounts right now, and that way he can stay put, and then we'll just come to him when we feel like it. He can't go out and go get cash in any illegitimate form because it's got to be put on that card. It's got to be put on that chip. Now, there will be ways around that, of course, and already we're seeing the, you know, cryptocurrencies that we've, you know, talked about from time to time. But even then, I mean, really, is it going to be able to hold up in this system that they're developing now, this cashless society?
Well, I think go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, just that I've experienced, you know, I think most people would be appalled at the way the banking system works. Even before it gets to that point, banks are already being told that they need to actually spy on citizens' everyday transactions, you know, much less, of course, the businesses. When I lost my house in a house fire, I had a real issue with putting all this money that we got from the insurance in the banking system. I didn't want to put the money there, partially because I was worried, you know, how long it's going to sit there, what would happen if God forbid, the system collapsed. But chiefly because I didn't want them being able to make that much more money, to use my money to make that much more fiat currency. It just seemed like something that I didn't have to do. And when I actually tried to go about cashing the check to pull it out, you wouldn't believe how almost impossible it was to do. It was six figures, just barely over six figures, which you wouldn't think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't just walk into the bank and ask for $100,000 anymore, you know?
Oh, well, no, and I knew that, but, you know, I had to give a heads up that, excuse me, that I wanted the check to be cash. But even the denominations that I chose to even want to take out, we were told that that would be what's considered structuring. You know, and it just so happens to be that a lot of businesses are set up that insurance actually covers transactions that they take on the way to the bank at $10,000. Or more, or less. There's a threshold, and unfortunately, people that try to abide by that actually get set up for structuring. So there's all kind of banking laws that most people don't realize that you're being watched a lot more heavily than what most people would really, I think, care to even know.
And now even more than ever, because it used to be a bank would report that you had made a transaction of $10,000 more in cash. Whether you brought the money, pulled the money in or pulled the money out or whatever the case may be. If you got more than $10,000 in cash, there was a little note that was sent to a man off on a desk somewhere. Now, that amount is $5,000. And from what I understand, it's supposed to be decreasing down to $1,000. So if you walk into a bank with more than $1,000 and give it to them and deposit it in your account, there will be a note. Hey, this guy just came in with $1,000 in cash. And it goes in a file somewhere, and, you know, you do that too often, I'm sure you'll get a knock on the door.
Well, my wife actually worked for a check cashing place when she was going through college, and they actually had to do just that. When somebody came in, I think it was over $1,000 at the time. It may have been $10,000, $9,000, but anything, there's a certain amount that if it hit this much that she had to actually to call a number. It was a federal government number, if I'm not mistaken. I forget what bureau specifically that it was, but she had to report it if they came in asking any kind of questions, you know, revolving, hey, how much can I send without really raising any flags? Well, guess what, that just raised the flag, you know. So it's amazing how many ways people are out there reporting you and watching your actions. It's a surveillance society in every aspect that it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, it feels that way, you know, especially the more technology advances, the less privacy we have in really all aspects of everything we do. Of course, things have gotten surveillance-wise way, 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 way worse under Obama and under W, but I think a lot of that just is the times. And think about when we found out about what the NSA was doing. Until Edward Snowden came out, that was nothing but this huge, grand conspiracy that people would look at you sideways when you said they're recording your phone calls. You're a crazy person. And, you know, now it's just openly discussed, like, well, yeah, that's what they do. You know, we make jokes about it. There was some interview with Michelle Obama in one of the night shows. I don't remember which one it was. And they were just openly joking about the NSA spying on everybody and just giggling about it. But, look, I think they would have done that a long time ago if they would have had the technology to do it. They do whatever they can, and who knows how long they've actually been doing it. Speaking of the banking system and banks, I want to go ahead and run down a couple of the top stories here. Y'all feel free to chime in on any of this, but I just kind of want to give a rundown real quick of what we've got on antimedia.org right now. A great article by our editor-in-chief, Who Lost Last Night's Presidential Debate? America Did. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the show. Howard Dean stands by his tweet accusing Trump of snorting blow and wants an answer. That was hilarious to me. First off, Howard Dean was a guy that was drunk at the DNC that nobody talked about or mentioned, and he's tweeting out that Trump's doing blow and goes on MSNBC earlier today, and he's like, I don't really believe it, but he still needs to answer the question. It's like, this is what just a complete farce this has become. Because what he was, I guess, sniffing during the debate last night, it kind of reminded me of that episode of Seinfeld with the sweater, and Kramer was allergic, and they thought, or the other guy was allergic, they thought he was on blow. Either way,
well, I couldn't help but read the title of that story. Seriously, made me laugh. I got such a kick out of that guy, a drunk guy. it just seemed so. Just the wording of it. Just crack me up. Yeah, Howard Dean, of all people, is calling Trump out. And it's like, now, and I guess maybe it didn't hurt that so many people didn't recognize Howard Dean and when he showed up drunk. But, yeah, what a hypocrite, huh?
And for those who don't remember where Howard Dean first really his fame was... Dave Chappelle made him really famous, even though he was famous before, made a fool of himself for doing it when he was running for president. Anyway, Wells Fargo or the Federal Reserve, who is the bigger fraud? We won't get too deep into this, Kevin, but I think I know what your answer would be if you.
Yeah.
I currently do not have a Wells Fargo account, so I think I'm good.
I did. Hey, and real quick, you know, well, I got screwed by them royally. They're you ever wonder why you got a little bit of money and suddenly you make two transactions and every one of your transactions now has suddenly caused so many overdrafts? You can thank Wells Fargo, the way their banking system is set up, and your ATM, your debit transactions are set up to hit the highest amount at midnight. So it empties out your account with your first purchases rather than the order in which you actually made them. So yeah, talk about some theft and some heartache. Wells Fargo, yeah, I would definitely say the Fed, but Wells Fargo definitely gets an honorable mention.
I had a Wells Fargo bank account about 10 years ago now, and they were absolutely the worst bank I have ever been with, even thought about. It was exactly what you were saying, Kevin. They would just take money from your account. Just straight up, just take it out. And be like, well, that's what we had to do. We were up there, it seemed like, twice a month until finally I was like, you know, this ain't happening anymore. And so, yeah, I'll never step foot in a Wells Fargo bank.
Yeah, I hate it, too. I was 21, went through it.
You might as well go ahead and bank at that bank that Walmart has. So, you know, the little bank that that's in Walmart that all the poor people go to.
It probably wouldn't be as bad, Shane. It really probably
I don't see where it could be. I have had a lot of friends. I mean, you know, Wells Fargo has a pretty large footprint in our area, and I can't remember which large bank that they swallowed up here. But
SouthTrust.
Yeah, they are. I've heard some just horrible, just awful, god awful stories. Every single place that or person that I've ever talked to that is banked with them. They're just they're the worst.
Well, their CEO huge bonuses, so that's a plus. Plus, they're robbing all their customers. Anyway, five times the United States helped ISIS. And that kind of leads me into the next story directly under on the front page of antimedia.org right now is Iraq is turning to Iran, not the U.S., to help fight ISIS. A lot of that... Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of it's proxy stuff and, you know, bickering amongst each other. But if you're Iraq, do you really blame them for wanting to be done with all that the U.S. has brought them? I mean, we talked about this story many times on here, but just recently with the Libyans coming out and saying that, you know, they're fed up with what's happened since Gaddafi was gone. And we're facing a similar situation right now in Syria. That's just a terrible, 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 terrible deal. Another story on the front page right now is dozens of airstrikes pound Aleppo, at least 85 reported killed. And, you know, they're saying that in the city right now that the hospitals are completely overwhelmed. There's few doctors that remain in the city. There's not, you know, a lot of people have left the city. So, again, you want to know where the refugees are coming from. Then we have directly under that, Syria says it has recorded audio proof that the U.S. is coordinating militarily with ISIS. Now, of course, you have to remember, just like the U.S. or Iran or anybody, Syria has its own form of propaganda. So is this true? I don't know. They have not released the audio yet. It's supposedly in Syrian intelligence. If, you know, if they release it, I think that will be huge news. But right now, it's just kind of like, you know.
The damage is done. Yeah, I think you made a great point that both sides, you know, a lot of us want to cheer for Syria because, you know, the U.S. is obviously helping to take down the Syrian regime. And it's not so much that all of us think Assad is any kind of great guy, but we're not supporting ISIS takeover. But yeah, it's a great point you made. Both of them have propaganda arms, and even if they don't release the video, the damage is, you know, look how many people have already heard this around the world and have said, yeah, I'm not surprised. Who is? So yeah, even if they don't release the video, they probably don't even have to at this point. I mean, everybody seems almost common knowledge now. Who would really be surprised at this if they did?
Oh, you know, I think for a lot of people it would be, but I think for those who pay attention every day, I don't think it would be too terribly shocking. And you know what? In a perfect world, Assad wouldn't be in charge in Syria. But this is what people need to remember is look at Iraq. Look at Libya. What's coming after this? What's the end result if and when Assad's gone? Everywhere the U.S. is gone, look, there are so many Americans that look back at Japan and look back at Germany. That's not what this is about. This is about total chaos and destruction. Just look at the situation with ISIS. We're sitting here saying maybe Syria has proof of this, blah, blah, blah. But what we do know is that ISIS runs rampant, and the United States military-industrial complex benefits from that because it gives them justification to stay in the Middle East. Just what Putin did in Syria, as fast as he did it when he first got into Syria, took out more ISIS installments than the United States had in a year. If that's the case, what are we doing over there? If Putin could do all that, whatever it was, a week or whatever, maybe a little bit more time back. But what are we even doing over there? How are we still in Afghanistan? I don't know how many times before, the 2012 election, we're definitely going to be out of Afghanistan. So people aren't even talking about that right now. I remember Joe Biden was talking about it in 2012. We're totally getting out. We're definitely getting out. Don't worry about it. They have zero plans to get out. And at the time, you know, you just kind of laugh and go, yeah, sure, you're never leaving. But here we are 4 years later. They're both leaving office, and we're still entrenched there. And still don't know why. At what point... Okay, forever it was about bin Laden, right? So when they got him, So then, now why aren't we still there? Like, they don't even pretend to give excuses now. They just don't even mention it. So, there you go. Nobel Peace Prize winner. Been at war longer than any president.
And bombed more countries.
Warmonger for show. Professional.
And, you know. But it's just, it's one thing. It's the same over and over and over and over and over. It just definitely doesn't. We know what we're going to get with Hillary. She's way more, I think, of a hawkish mindset than Obama's ever thought of being. And we're talking about Obama dropping all the bombs he's dropped, being at war with all the countries he's been at war with, either discreetly or out in the open. And he came in promoting peace. What are we going to get when we get a candidate that comes in promoting wanting to bomb people? Like, how much worse is it going to get?
And let's go ahead and clarify, that's both of the candidates that are running for president right now. Both of them are ready to go to battle somewhere, whether it be down in Mexico to build a wall or whether it be continuing what we have over in the Middle East. There are no plans to change any of that. In fact, both of them kind of want to ramp it up a little bit.
Well, I think that's probably more an indication of the whole system as a whole. I don't think... I think personally, if there's anything that Donald's been serious about, I think it's his opposition to majority of the warfare state. I don't think it's good for business. It's not good for, it's good for your arms dealing and your arms businesses. But I don't think it's not good for the debt. I mean, listen to what all he's, and of course, he clarified this, which I hated to hear him backtrack on his dissing of NATO during the speech the other night or right prior to, but yeah, I don't think he really wants to go to war with a lot of countries. I don't think it benefits the U.S. I mean, look at the money it would cost. I think that, Americans are tired of global war as much as we still keep going. So, I think that's one thing. If we end up with war, I think that's part of the system. But I think that he would probably be reluctant to. I think even Obama would have been and probably was reluctant to go into some of these wars. But that didn't mean he didn't march right in there, that's for sure, as the head of the empire.
I want to read a quick couple lines from a story we actually have up on the site from last week. The headline is Pentagon seeks 500 more ground troops in Iraq for the Mosul invasion. So with officials saying that the planned invasion of the city of Mosul could begin as soon as October, the Pentagon is once again requesting more U.S. ground troops to be deployed into the area around the city. The Pentagon has already deployed several hundred troops multiple times in the last 2 months on the same basis. What, for people that aren't paying attention to it, what they've been doing in Iraq is they're sending a few hundred troops here, they're sending a few hundred troops there, and it's slowly mounting up. First off, we never left Iraq to begin with. We changed the name of soldier to advisor. But the Pentagon right now is seeking another 500 permanent U.S. ground troops in Iraq, which would bring the official figure in the country to 4,900. In practice, the Pentagon already is believed to have in excess of 6,000 troops in Iraq, but labels many of them temporary and doesn't count them, despite their deployments not having any specific end date. So there goes another one. Weren't we supposed to be out of Iraq by now? Obama's in the prison for 8 years, and we're still in Afghanistan and Iraq. Wasn't that supposed to be like the thing he did the first week he was there? I don't know. When Trump says stuff about not being in war, I don't believe it. I don't buy it at all.
No, and he has softened his stance a little bit on that since the early Republican debates. If you've noticed, he definitely has taken more of a, well, we're going to, I'll consult with the generals and consult with so-and-so, and we'll try to devise a plan. He's definitely taken a step back from that. And I think that was largely due to his handlers pulling him off to the side and telling him what he could say, what he couldn't say, where he can go and where he cannot go in the you know remaining debates, because the first few debates in the the Republican debates were just, I mean, they were fireworks left and right. And you had the Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, they tried to gang up on him a little bit, and he fought both of them ferociously. It was awesome. And then as it kind of progressed on, people, it seems like even the audience is kind of tired of his shenanigans a little bit. And that kind of was the end result of what we saw the other night when he actually was put in front of an audience of, that was split down the middle as far as hard right and hard left. And, I don't know. It's going to be curious to see if he doesn't gain momentum as far as the roaring crowds and the hearty applause and laughters and cheers. I don't know how that's going to play out for him. I really don't, because that's fueled him. I mean, that's fueled his campaign up to this point.
You're going to get more of the same out of him, because this guy at one point was calling out Saudi Arabia for 9/11, was calling out the Federal Reserve, and now, which he did mention the Federal Reserve, does that mean anything? No, but because we're sitting here talking about all the broken promises of politicians, but he's softened on his Saudi stance so much that he, if he wanted to, he could have pinned her really hard on all the money she's taken from Saudi Arabia and the Clinton Foundation, but he didn't. So, that's what happens. He's not even elected yet, and he's backed up immensely on some of the stuff he was saying. So, again, you had a guy that was spouting so much rhetoric about peace, they gave him a Nobel Peace Prize, and look at what we have. So, for me, the people even pretending they want to bomb people, I just don't know where they take it from here, but I know it's not good. I certainly know that all this Russian business is propaganda. Everything in the world's Russia's fault. I don't see it. I don't see it. I see it all as just antagonizing each other. They want war with Russia. This goes back to Mitt Romney in 2012. This has been on their minds, it's the neoconservatives, if you want to call it, that whole movement. They've had Russia on their minds for a while. And they're not going to take their foot off the gas, and Hillary is in bed with every single bit of that. So don't think for a second, if it's this neoconservative Republican plan, she's right along with it. Let's not forget that Hillary Clinton was getting her same foreign policy advice from the same people as Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't. It feels like beating a dead horse. How many times can you call these people liar? How many times can you say we're doing this around the world, we're doing that around the world? But until something changes, do either one of y'all see anything changing anytime soon for the better, Kevin?
Oh no! Oh no! No! No!
No! Not a bit.
I think it's only a matter of how worse it will get. But I tell you this. Everybody said, a lot of people thought that, if I had a dime for every time somebody said that Obama won't leave office, which, of course, I know he's not left office yet, and somebody will say, there's still plenty of time. I'm not worried about that. But I know plenty of people didn't expect the U.S. to survive this last 8 years, so I'm not ready to say that the U.S. is going to be dead after eight more. So
I don't think it's that it'll be dead. I just don't know.
I understand the pessimism.
And look, I'm bad about it. I don't know if it'll be recognizable from today, though.
Oh, it's probably not recognizable from 10 years ago.
I don't think so. I mean, it's certainly not recognizable from 16 years ago.
Yeah.
We've only got here just a couple of minutes here left in the show. I'm going to go ahead and go to you, Shannon. If you got any just overall thoughts where we're going to go, what we can do anything for anybody. Live life, be happy. What are your thoughts?
Well, first off, very quickly, everybody needs to learn how to do things. When I say do things, I mean grow a garden, build a house, be able to do for yourselves, because it's fixing to get really, really tight for the have-nots, and I think that's a very large part of our listening audience. I know none of us are rolling in money right now, and that's really going to be our only way out of this. We really need to stop contributing to this system financially, because that's the only that's the only way they're going to hear us. I'm sorry, that's it. Money.
Wow, that's what makes the world go round, isn't it? I tell you real quick before I jump over to you, Kevin, I wanted to mention one more story we've got up. Since we've mentioned Saudi Arabia so much and their ties to everything, United States, over 14,000 women in Saudi Arabia have signed a petition and sent to King Salman on Monday calling for an end to the kingdom's guardianship system, which requires women to have male permission for most of life's tasks.
How many? 14,000?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. How many women are, do we now have any idea how many women are roughly maybe in Saudi Arabia?
A lot more than 14,000.
Right, I'm just kidding. Man. Well, it's, at least there's a step, because that's 14,000 that are, you know, that everybody, all the other women will see those 14,000 and hopefully, you know, rally the troops, rally some more.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I know that a lot of women there are, were scared of the repercussions about putting their name on something like this, but a lot of them, I think, are just fed up. I know that the women, they're really educated, and, you know, that they have degrees. So I think the society will change there, but, you know, how much time? It's just so funny to me that all the stuff that the United States says it hates about quote-unquote Muslim countries, it's their ally that is by far one of the worst when it comes to oppression, especially human rights. I mean, we spend a year on this show every Tuesday and Thursday opening the show with how many people Saudi Arabia had beheaded. And I know it's over 100 this year. You know, we talk about ISIS beheading people. Well, guess what? So does our ally. Anyways, Kevin, real quick, we got a minute to go. Well, that's it. Anti-Media Radio.
Let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.